The war on drugs is over. Drugs won. So now what? Prohibition has failed.
Why do good, intelligent people do things that hurt them so badly?
It's called the American disease.
Addicts are on a self-destructive road in their lives. One of the main things they need is a powerful life transformation.
What will it take to achieve a lasting peace of mind?
Over the last 20 years, the common refrain we hear from authorities who are warning the populace of the dangers of drug abuse is just say no. I think an alternative to just say N-O might be just say K-N-O-W.
Over 65% of the world's supply of illicit drugs are acquired by North Americans. We're also the planet's best customers for legally prescribed antidepressants.
Why?
I'm Don Hill. Several years ago, I followed up on a story that had great play in the international press. The haunting images of children on an Indian reserve in Canada, sniffing gas from green garbage bags. They were hooked, and they were dying. Despite tens of millions of dollars of intervention, and that's money spent in just one native community alone, the battle against substance abuse addiction has utterly failed. In fact, it's getting worse. There is hope, and that's what this program is all about. I'm going to tell you about a successful therapy, a powerful hallucinogenic drug, declared illegal for most of us, is used to put out the fires of addiction. I'll talk about that in just a moment. You're also going to hear a challenge to decades of thinking about why teenagers use drugs. They may well be seeking to alter their brain chemistry for good reason. The human central nervous system requires it. Now, if you have a moral compass that only points in one direction, you're probably not going to want to hear what I have to say. But in a publicly funded healthcare system, can any country afford to squander millions on politically correct cures and interventions that don't work? Or worse, may be doing more harm than good? Matthew Kelly is on the vanguard of mitigating substance abuse at a unique treatment facility in the United States.
I'm a clinical psychologist with a science background. What we've done in the last 50 years has not worked very well, and it's been very expensive. Nothing we know has worked so far. So we're willing to take a little bit of chance as long as there's a scientific logic to it.
Dr. Matthew Kelly. You'll be hearing more from him later in the program. But first, some background about why I'm telling you this story. I'd read about the success of the Native American Church in breaking the spell of addiction by administering peyote in a ritual sacrament. Church members have the legal right to use and cultivate the mystical cactus. They call it medicine. You might think it's crazy to give people psychedelic drugs to get them off other drugs, but if results are what matter, there's something definitely to be said for this provocative therapy. There are over 250,000 registered Native American church members. Many of them are located in the southwestern United States. This is where my investigation begins.
This is New Mexico, and they call it the land of enchantment. And if I sound out of breath, it's because I am. We're 7,000 feet above sea level. This is the spiritual home for the Hopi, Zuni, and Navajo Native Americans.
I have been in this religion all my life.
This is Lawrence Davis Largo. He's a roadman, a peyote priest with the Native American Church.
I grew up with this sacred medicine. I've learned the ways through my father and my mother. When you take this medicine, it's a wonderful feeling. Most people say that it's still some sort of a hallucination. But my understanding, I am 44 years old now. As long as I have been taking this medicine, there's no such thing as a hallucination in my mind. It has to be done with prayer, with reverence, with humility. If you're sick, you ask this medicine to help you.
Lawrence Davis Largo. It's said the peyote medicine can work as a vaccine against substance abuse. And here in Navajo land, alcoholics and drug addicts who run afoul of the law can legally use the medicine at a remarkable treatment center. It's located inside a jail. That's where I'm going.
I'm heading toward Gallup in southwestern New Mexico. Gallup is a border town. It's very close to Mexico. It also has an unusual distinction that in all of the counties in the United States, there are over 3,000,
McKinley County had the highest rate of alcoholism in the nation. The vast majority of alcoholics were Native Americans, and that earned Gallup the nickname Drunk City, USA. It can snow here, the winter months of January and February being particularly harsh, especially for those caught dead drunk on the streets. Dr. Matthew Kelly.
Well, at the time, in those days, we were losing about 13 people every month from exposure deaths and injury, accident-related, alcohol-related deaths on the street. In these days, since we've made so much progress, the worst month, we might lose three. Like a real cold month, we might have three people freeze to death.
The turnaround came in the 1990s with the building of the Nanajoey Center, or NCI as people here call it. Dr. Kelly, at the time of this interview, was NCI's chief clinical psychologist.
We enacted a state statute, which is called protective custody, and now we pick up people very early in their intoxication and bring them to NCI for 5 days of detox, against their will, because these people are in danger to themselves and danger to others.
In the early going of NCI, 36,000 people were taken into protective custody every year. Today, that number has been cut to less than half.
You know, the bottom line is, why do people abuse substance? Why do they drink? Why do good, intelligent people do things that hurt them so badly? If a man has a headache and takes an aspirin, you can't blame him. If a man's heart is crushed and he can't smile with his children, if he can't feel good about himself, you can't really blame him for drinking. Drinking and drugging is actually a survival mechanism. Even though it can kill you, ironically, it's also a survival tool. As W.C. Fields said, I'd rather have a bottle in front of me than to have a frontal lobotomy. Drinking is a way of coping for many people who lack coping skills or lack the opportunity or education or economic ability to find new opportunities.
Getting people off drugs and alcohol is one thing. Getting them to stay off is another. This is where the Native American Church comes in. Mental health professionals team up with Navajo elders and medicine men inside NCI. And outside the lockup, there's a spiritual machinery to bring about positive change. A sweat lodge, and a traditional hogan, a circular dwelling constructed with wood. All are used as aids to recovery.
About 75% of our therapeutic practices here are Native American in origin. Does this work well? Well, about 70% of our graduates, 70%, report that they've had significant changes in their life. Only about 27% have stopped drinking with total abstinence. Another 35% have made significant improvement. In other words, they still have binges occasionally or they fall down occasionally.
These numbers have more to say about treating addiction in Native American communities. The truth is, the standard protocol for intervention, white man's medicine, has made no impact on the overall figures. Even if you did nothing, no medically authorized intervention whatsoever, the rate of relapse among Native Americans is pretty much the same.
Well, one of the best-kept secrets to psychologists who, in large part, depend upon clients for their income is the experiments by Isink and many others since that time, that if you have individuals wait for treatment, that the spontaneous recovery is very close to the percentage of people who recover after any therapy.
Michael Persinger is the director of the Behavioral Neuroscience Laboratory at Laurentian University in Canada. Evidence that conventional treatment doesn't work as advertised dates back to the early going of the 1950s. A British psychologist at the time, Hans Eysenck, called into question the effectiveness of his professional colleagues. He reviewed 24 major studies and concluded that patients waiting to see a psychotherapist were just as likely to cure themselves spontaneously than those actually treated by a mental health professional.
Why don't we pursue other aspects and other ways of treating individuals if we know that effectively most of the things that people go to get treat will spontaneously resolve, including depressions? Not all of them, but many of them. And the answer is, this is a very profitable part of society.
The effectiveness of psychotherapy is now an open debate. And while there are quibbles about proper methodology, data capture, and the political science of scientific inquiry, it's been generally accepted that conventional psychotherapy in practice has a Western cultural bias, and in fact, may be inappropriate for people that hold values contrary to the dominant culture.
Well, for many years we've known that substance abuse treatment doesn't work well. It doesn't work well for Anglo-European people, it doesn't work well for black people, and it certainly doesn't work for Native American people. The field has been kind of in a paradigm that's a failed paradigm. Most Native Americans that go to treatment either leave early or they find it not effective. That's been pretty well known. It's not just Native Americans, it's all, most races.
Matthew Kelly, why do people take drugs? It's a simple question, yet there's surprisingly little scientific data to back up what for many seems to be a no-brainer. We're only just beginning to understand scientifically why some people must seek altered states of awareness, even if it hurts them. Dr. Michael Prisinger.
Addiction is simply in the extreme form of reward orientation. I mean, basically, the hedonism theory or description of human behavior is pretty accurate. Human beings tend to maintain their behavior if they're rewarded and to avoid behavior that's punished. Now, the extreme ends of that normal distribution of reward and punishment is addiction. And so it follows the same neuroscientific principles as eating or drinking or sexuality, except that it's more extreme and more behavior is spent oriented towards it. In general, the earlier a person begins with an addiction, the more difficult it is to break. And we know the areas of the brain that are involved with it are indeed the ones that are very markedly tied to consumption, to sexuality, and to risk-taking. But the question is, why is our society becoming more oriented towards novelty? I've thought about that and I've looked at the epidemiological and historical data. And novelty as a focus has emerged in the last 200 years, primarily because our environment has become more and more constant. 200 years ago, in a given day, you would have a tremendous range of temperature because you didn't have home heating. You had a tremendous range of eating because you didn't have 3 squares a day. You had to look for clothing. There was always the distress of being potentially annihilated by a competitor. But once the world became extraordinarily constant, and most people don't realize how constant it is until you have a catastrophe like New Orleans, that it became so constant that now the only change is these occasional novelty boosts and these novelty jags. And so our society, because it's become so constant physically, physiologically, now the only kind of stimulation for the brain is the novelty boost, the addiction that we all see. If we had our time machines and went back 4,000 or 5,000 years ago when people were living subsistence, novelty probably wasn't an issue because every day was novel.
Michael Persinger, is there something going on in our culture, a culture that is materially well off and relatively free of danger, that's pushing our young toward illicit drugs, to seek thrills that put them in harm's way? Perhaps illicit drugs fill a void in young people's lives, but not quite the way we imagine. Let me offer this. Difficult experiences are necessary to help mature young minds. Our youngsters do not have rigorous rites of passage anymore. They are rarely challenged physically to the point of deprivation, to the point where waves of brain chemistry flood their bodies. Now, think of the central nervous system's demand for stimulation. It's a requirement, no matter how old you are. Again, here's Dr. Michael Persinger.
First of all, retirement's a social phenomenon. It doesn't tell you anything about the brain. We now realize that if a person is healthy, the brain does not change appreciably, even into the 70s and 80s, and sometimes 90s. So if the person has had a history of vigorous activity, they've worked their entire life, they've had massive cortical stimulation, like most of the individuals that grew up during the Depression and during the World War II, who are now in the elderly population, their brains are now set, they're still set, for that required level of stimulation. And just because you're retired, it doesn't change the set point. So now some other stimulus has to replace it. And any kind of thrill factor that produces that stimulation, gambling, casinos, and other kinds of related behavioral addictions will be the key way by which these individuals can now satisfy that demand. Now, the other side of the coin is suppose you don't do that. Several years ago, we completed the study of retired Inco miners, and we found that those who died within 5 years are those that simply stopped. There's the ones that went out into the cabin, did nothing, retired, literally, cortically. They also showed indications that may have been hallucinating and showed very crazy kinds of behaviors. And these individuals died from a variety of causes. The individuals that maintained the level of stimulation were still alive at the end of the study.
I'm Don Hill, and you're listening to a special report, Stoned Straight 2, a follow-up on a radio documentary I made several years ago. The war on drugs has been pointless and costly, and some of the most conservative minds in the United States have said as much. The situation is getting worse, not better. Casualties walk the streets in every community in North America. And simply doing more of what's already been done to combat substance abuse isn't going to work. Matthew Kelly is a clinical psychologist. At the time of this interview, he was at NCI, the Nanajoey Rehabilitation Center in Gallup, New Mexico.
All around the country, Native American therapists, counselors, medicine people have had a dream, not just here, but in many, many places, that cultural Native American therapeutic practices, ancient practices, might have modern, sophisticated application. We're not the first to think of this. Almost all Native American providers believe this. It's a little bit difficult to organize and difficult to fund, but there's been enough scientific research in the last years to offer a basis of support. Native American techniques, when they're properly applied to appropriate people under the appropriate conditions, are actually very interesting, sophisticated tools for modern people. We're not trying to get people to move back into the past. We want techniques that make people resilient to the stresses of life. We want techniques that change physiology. This is called psychophysiological change. We want techniques that change brainwaves, blood pressure, heart rates, hormones, muscle tension. And many of the Native American techniques do this.
A provocative therapy for treating substance abuse and alcohol addiction is the use of peyote medicine in a prescribed ritual.
Mere sobriety is in and of itself not sufficient. It needs to be anchored within a spiritual frame of reference, which is provided through the ceremonies of the Native American Church, where peyote is ingested as a ritual sacrament.
Charles Grobe is a professor of psychiatry at the UCLA School of Medicine. Dr. Grobe is one of the few researchers in America who have scientifically investigated the therapeutic value of psychedelic medicines.
The Native American Indian peoples have been a very disempowered people. The incidence of alcoholism is rampant. Native Americans are particularly vulnerable to the injurious effects of alcohol. They have not responded well at all to conventional medical and conventional religious models utilizing treatment. However, what they have appeared to respond to in a very impressive manner consistently over almost the last 100 years has been the model created by the Native American Church, whereby the plant hallucinogen peyote is used within a sacramental context. And the success rates of Native American alcoholics who participate in Native American church ceremonies is much, much higher than that for any other model you might examine.
I agree, because I'm a person who's in recovery myself.
Edward Largo is a traditional counselor at the NCI Center.
Basically, mere sobriety isn't enough, because in order to achieve that sobriety, you have to find out exactly who you are, you know, mentally, emotionally, physically, and spiritually. That's where it all starts, you know.
And many of the Native American techniques do this. Sweat lodge, for example, it's a very complicated therapeutic technique. You're sitting in the darkness on the ground in the mud with tremendous heat. You can't see anything. You're talking directly to the rocks. Tremendous therapeutic change occurs. The BS drops away. The bragging drops away. It's just you and your creator and you and your problems. And a sweat lodge is a very sacred environment that produces psychophysiological changes. Like, for example, the brainwaves, the alpha brainwaves increase, the theta brainwaves increase. After a sweat lodge, the person is generally relaxed, generally wants to go to sleep. The pain and suffering, the tension of his body is gone.
These are some of the things that we go through here at NCI Nijoni Center, is to actually re-identify yourself.
This is Janice Boyd. She's a traditional counselor at NCI.
And through that, we utilize sweat lodge, roll tobacco to purify ourselves, and we roll it, we smoke it, we honor the four directions, and then we honor our four, the sacred mountains too, to keep in balance within ourselves.
Also, Native American techniques like drumming and dancing, singing, blessing ceremonies that often last days. These techniques involve the community, the culture, they involve the physiology of the person. The person goes through many intense emotional experiences, from ecstasy to depression to fear to crying, release, catharsis. The whole range of human emotions are presented in these therapies. Very different, for example, than a 55-minute hour with a counselor in an air-conditioned office. Most Native American techniques are relationships that you establish between your therapist, your healer, and yourself, and your past, your history, your culture, your community, and nature. There's a lot more components, interactive components, that make it a very sophisticated, intelligent tool for good people.
We pray through these things to strengthen ourselves, to strengthen our mind, to go on with life how we should be going. And this is why, you know, here at NCI is maybe somehow, you know, we like to teach you those things. And maybe we can exchange these things that, you know, how to help one another.
Sometimes we're referred to as the last chance people. We're the last chance people. If you can't do it here, you may not make it. I've been here close to 7 years, and over close to 300 people have died, clients that we've dealt with. So if we can't do it, it's their last chance.
NCI is a state-run, federally funded institution. And so it might seem strange that peyote, strictly off-limits to most Americans, can be legally used in this place. It's a religious rite of the Native American Church, one after years of legal wrangling with government authorities. The world of the addicted is a small one. It's all about the self. What makes the peyote medicine effective is it shakes the addict out of their self-referencing world and replaces it with a universe of possibility. It can be quite humbling, and for some, a liberating experience.
Addicts are on a self-destructive road in their lives. It's like an oil well fire that's burning for months. It takes something powerful like peyote, which works like dynamite, to blow out the fire. So they can get off this self-destructive road onto a more positive road, like the red road, the spiritual road of the Native American.
That's George Greer, a psychiatrist in Santa Fe, New Mexico. He's also the medical director of the Hefter Research Institute.
I've worked in the prison system for 15 years or more. And I've seen people stuck in treatments that don't work. They leave prison, they get treatment, they go out, they get drunk, they commit a crime, they come back in. They need a powerful spiritual transformation in the context of their own culture, and they need a community to support them. The Native American church ritual supplies the community, the context of the ritual, and the powerful medicine to blow out this oil well fire that's been their addiction for years.
We need to recognize that alcoholism and drug addiction are endemic within our society and are inflicting tremendous costs. We also need to examine that mainstream treatments, conventional treatment modalities, by and large, have been ineffectual.
Dr. Charles Grobe is a professor of psychiatry at the UCLA School of Medicine.
We then need to ask ourselves whether there may in fact be alternative treatment models, even models which have been viewed as taboo within mainstream cultures, but models nevertheless which may actually work.
One of the exciting things to me professionally is that Native American techniques might actually show us the way into improving the dominant culture. That we may learn important lessons to improve the quality of American psychology, because the field of psychology is really, for the amount of money and dollars we spend, is a failed field. It's well written about. There's a lot of papers on this. So what we try to do in our traditional programs is to teach people to make their own medicine, to make your own medicine, to get you on the path of well-briety. We're learning here how to be a human being. Native American techniques are trying to teach us all how to reconnect with the things that really are important. Not the materialism of life or prestige, but of our family and our breath and our prayers and our sleep at night. The things that really matter to create a life worth living. This is what Native American techniques have to offer.
The Native American church and its peyote medicine is quietly moving north. Some members are practicing below the radar in Canada.
Like the Navajos have a philosophy called the Beauty Way philosophy. That's deep in all the cultural events. All cultural thought centers around the Beauty Way of life, which basically means that life is a miracle, that every day you're above the earth is a miracle, that when the sun comes up is a great blessing, and how you act, how you feel, how you relate, how you remember, how you think, these beautiful things are that's the only thing that really matters. It doesn't matter how much money. What matters is how you relate to the earth and your family and yourself, standing tall as a beautiful human being as best you can. We have a motto in Hinabatso society. It says, against all odds, we walk in beauty. Against all odds, we walk with sobriety. Against all odds, we walk on the path towards well-briety.
Dr. Matthew Kelly. For 11 years, he was the chief psychologist at the NCI treatment facility in Gallup, New Mexico. I've got one last piece of business before I leave you to your thoughts about what you've just heard. You must be wondering, did I take peyote? Well, I was invited to a ceremony, and the opportunity was there to partake of the medicine, but it was an offer I gently turned down, because I respect the medicine as sacred, and I'm not a member of the Native American Church, not to mention that I would be breaking the law inside a jail. Stoned Straight 2 is the second in a series of programs investigating substance abuse addiction in our culture. Details about this program, including links to addiction research and other information, is available on my website, appropriate-entertainment.com. I want to thank everyone associated with NCI in Gallup, New Mexico, and in particular, Dr. Matthew Kelly. Thanks also to Kevin Kloss for the music you hear. There's more of it. His website address is www.kevinkloss.com. Let me know what you think about this program. visit my website and send me an email, appropriate-entertainment.com. I'm Don Hill. Thanks for listening.